I'm Lauren from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a Marvel Universe fan show, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other incredible geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
This is episode 294 of Better Podcasting. On this show, we continue our podcast media host discussion, talking about the non-traditional distribution platform, Substack.
But first, in this week's Better Podnerings, topics include StreamYard being acquired by Bending Spoon, I have a new podcast studio toy, and I do not have Shure's latest microphone.
And finally, in this week's Better Pod Back, we resolve our love of transcripts.
Lauren, start the show now.
This is Better Podcasting. We are hobby podcasters through and through, just like you. That's why we are different. We minimize the money talk so that you can focus on building a better podcast.
Welcome to episode 294 of Better Podcasting. I am Steven, and I am pleased to say, I don't know why, but he hasn't abandoned me yet. He's SP.
I'm contractually obligated for the length of my mortgage to do this show for you. It's just with you, not for you. It's in the contract. I got a lower interest rate by doing it. Oh, by the way, I got a nice mug from a listener. It's Eric from Steel Watching, which is about Remington Steel. Eric does the podcast with Sarah. Thank you very much for the mug. I appreciate it.
I like steel. It's probably my favorite metal.
I thought you liked Man of Steel. I thought that was your favorite DC movie.
I love all things Superman, especially when he's dark and gritty.
Thought you liked the mustache the most.
We are not here to talk about Superman. No, we're here to talk about podcasting. And hey, if you didn't know this, we are a hobby podcast and we love fellow hobby podcasters. And one of the things you can do is go to GunnaGeek.com/network and check out some other amazing hobby podcasters over there. And anybody that's done any podcasting, including these hobby podcasts, have at some point had something go wrong with their podcast. And when it went wrong, they had to find a way to fix it. And if you are that person, we would love to hear from you. What went wrong with your podcast? How did you fix it? Because we used to do a segment called How I Saved My Podcast, where it could be an exchange of podcasting juices about your creative process. And so we would love to have those creative juices come back to the show so that everybody can learn from each other.
I think in this day and age, when a lot of people are transitioning to video podcasting, that we should have a lot more video podcasting, How I Saved My Podcast stories. So that counts. If you do a video podcast, if you've had to save your show somehow, I want to hear about it. You can get a hold of us at podcast@betterpodcasting.com.
All right, let's start off the Better Podnerings with some fun topics, because this is fun, because this is something that you use, and our fellow hobby podcaster Chris Farrell over on All Things Good and Nerdy, he also uses this, and so we're going to hope that it keeps being fun and doesn't turn into that sarcastic use of the word fun.
Oh my gosh, when I saw this news, I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to change right now, right now. Now, then I thought, you know, it's going to take a few months to break, so I'll continue to use it for a while. And to be honest with you, I don't know if it's going to break or not. What we're talking about here is we were informed in our Discord server rather quickly that the streaming service StreamYard, which I use to both stream and record my show, and so does Chris, has been acquired by a company called Bending Spoons. Now, why is this important? Because Bending Spoons has also acquired other companies that they haven't been good stewards of the product. Let's put it that way, right?
People believe that the product went downhill after it was acquired by this company. That's the notion. And I say people because that was the notion in our Discord. So I can legitimately say that.
Yeah, there was definitely more than three. There was a whole host of people that were like, ew, well, it was a good run while it lasted, that sort of thing. And to be honest with you, I don't know exactly where I'm going to go. We use Video Ninja and Video.Ninja and OBS to record this show. I've started to dabble along those lines myself. I like the simplicity of StreamYard, but if they're going to not support the product and it have it break over time, whatever, the first time it breaks, I'm going to run, not walk, but run to something else. And OBS is my back stop right now. That's where I'm thinking right now, unless somebody else says I am not using Riverside. Nope. Not doing that, not doing Zencaster, not doing Riverside. I've seen and heard and read too many horror stories over on the R Podcasting subreddit to even try those services. So really what I'm thinking about is OBS. Yeah.
The other thing, if something does happen with StreamYard, and let's keep our fingers crossed and click our red ruby heels and all these other things we need to do that it will keep working well. I know there has been some services like Restream, for example. They created a studio mode. I don't remember. There's another competitor that came out shortly after Restream. I think they did the same thing. So there might be a couple other options. Of course, those options might not be good either. I honestly don't know. I've never used the studio portion of Restream. So, you know, we'll see. I'm going to hope that StreamYard keeps working well because they've put a lot of good features in there. They've made it really easy for people to just start doing video streams in a multi-track function to it, that if you want that capability, there's a lot of great features in there and it's been reliable to date. So let's keep our fingers crossed that that keeps happening, because StreamYard is used by a lot of people, but just be aware they have been acquired. And in any case, generally speaking, I think it's safe to assume when somebody is acquired by somebody else, there's changes that happen. That's usually the case with any acquisition. Changes happen eventually. And so you can probably expect to see some form of changes at some point with StreamYard.
They have been developing an awful lot of innovations lately, particularly thinking about the video creator. I was going to say podcast, but I think creator is probably a better term to use. And I know Chris, our co-host on Gonna Geek, he's been using a lot of those on his show, All Things Good and Nerdy. And it's actually enticed me to try out a few. Chris and I are on two separate plans, but there are some innovations that have started to appear on my plan, which is a lesser plan. It's a beta plan that came out a long time ago that I was going to leave the service, but they knocked me down to a $10 a month plan. And I have been happily using it since, but the innovations that Chris has started to use for shorts, video shorts on social media and that sort of stuff with captions, automated captions or automated titles and stuff, it looks pretty neat and it's a low effort for the creator. So if you're talking about a hobby podcaster like the three of us are, you know, I'll include Chris in there, we don't have a ton of time for that sort of stuff. So if you can pull those out automatically and have it available, that's pretty good. So StreamYard has been maintained and improved lately, and I am hoping that at least continues to be maintained at the current level, if not maybe even improved now that they've been acquired by somebody else. So we'll see. We'll see. My hope is there, but I also know that if it starts to break, as I mentioned before, I'm not going to try to stick around. I'm not going to ride it into the ground. I'm just going to leave.
So what you're saying is you won't try to straighten out the spoon. Is that what you're saying?
Steven, what's going to boggle your mind later is there is no spoon.
Oh, whoa. All right, let's move on to the next thing here. This is interesting because you stumbled across something over this past weekend. Well, past weekend being last Thursday. To do with Pinecast. We've reviewed Pinecast here, and we use Pinecast for a couple of our shows, and neither of us are actually actively posting to Pinecast. This is something that we both have shows that are on there. We, at different points, have actively posted to Pinecast. My activity with Pinecast is once a month, and yours is when, I believe, you bring back Better Podcasting Chats with SP, which, you know, I'm sure will happen at some point. And last week, you made a discovery that there was a problem with the uptime, at least as far as logging into the portal went. What happened?
Full disclosure, we're both on the $5 a month grandfathered plan, so that's why we both maintain accounts over there. And I went to go log in, and I got nothing. I got a big 404. Couldn't even get to their webpage, right? So it was at least 15 minutes, because I went back into the messaging afterwards in the timeline. It was probably closer to an hour, but I can only prove about 15 minutes. You couldn't get in there at all. Couldn't get into the back end. I did check. I went to Spotify, and I tried to play an episode, and it did play. So I'm thinking that the actual hosting itself didn't break, but the front end appeared to break for me. And I couldn't get in, couldn't see anything, couldn't do any changes at all. If I was uploading an episode, I couldn't have uploaded an episode. I couldn't change anything. If I had something to fix in my feed, like a misspelling or a term that I wanted to take out of show notes or whatever, it just wasn't available for that. I did post on the X, trying to maintain, you know, the correct nomenclature these days for the service that used to be known as Twitter. I did go to @getpinecast, which I believe is the official X account for Pinecast. And I wanted to ask, hey, notice I couldn't get in. Forget what I actually, what the actual quote said, but is there any downtime going on? Are you going to be get back up? You know, basically what's going on. I got nothing back. Even after the service came back, it was left unanswered. And we know for a fact that there's one guy behind the scenes, Matt, and he's been known before to say he's the one guy and he takes care of stuff. So, okay, this is what you get. This is a service that you get. He probably was concentrating on getting it back up. There was no customer service, no other agent to go on social media and say, this is what's going on. So you literally didn't have any idea. If it was extended, I think, and I'm not going to speak for Matt, but I think he would have came on social media and just gave a short blurb saying, hey, I'm working on something. It's going to be back soon or something like that. But again, this is the level of service that you get for with a company that allegedly has one guy working on it. And yeah, I just wanted to give a quick update on it and say that this occurred. I have noticed downtimes in the past, but this was the first quantifiable downtime that I could get where I was trying to get to the service on my iPad just to check things, right? And I wasn't able to. It could have just been me, could have been my internet, could have been my iPad. But this, I made sure I checked. I asked Steven, I asked in our Discord server, Waffles, who also hosts his show, which is Play Comics on Pinecast. He said he couldn't get to it as well. So we have confirmation from multiple sources in multiple parts of the country and North America that Pinecast was down. So I just want to give that a quick update since we did review Pinecast for our media host reviews.
Yeah, and my experience was that I could access RSS feeds. I did try that. I could access their front page. It was just the back end dashboard, like you said. So I didn't try to play media, though. So I'm glad you did. So I wonder what that is. I would be nice to have a bit of information about it. I suppose, in theory, if that back end is managed differently, maybe it was something to do with whatever service that was on. But yeah, it would be nice to have some more information for sure.
That's a great example. So they might have been using a CDN. It might have been the media that I was playing might have actually been parked on a CDN server, which for the layman, it's like a staging area that you put your distribution of your podcast in different servers around the world, really. And the actual main hub might have been down, but its CDNs might have been up. So it worked, and that's all I cared about at the time. If it goes down again, I think we'll do a little bit more extensive testing, but it's not like, oh, it's going to go down at 8:00 on Wednesday. Let's all get ready. It's just, you know, whenever it happens. So, yeah.
Let's move on to the next one here. You said that you were going to throw out, I believe was your direct words, you're going to throw out your SM7B and you're going to throw out all of your analog audio equipment because there was a new microphone that you wanted to get. Is that what you said?
That is not what I said at all. You know, funny enough, I watch a sailing YouTube podcast. So the guy that runs the Sailing Doodles show on YouTube also has a podcast. and he just recently did a podcast, and he has a Shure SM7 microphone that he uses to record the podcast. It's also a video show, so you see it on YouTube. And I saw the differences between the Shure SM7 microphone that he used, and I went back to this announcement for the Shure MV7 Plus. So I think I said, I can't remember what I said before, but MV7 was the microphone that he was using, and the MV7 Plus microphone is out now. So they did a couple of updates to it. Predominantly the updates, as far as I know, is the USB was updated from a micro USB to a USB-C connection, which I think in this day and age, to stay competitive, you need to use a USB-C connection. And then also the LED touch panel, which is on the top of the microphone right behind the grill, that was updated to a solid touch panel versus little LED dots across the top. And it is customizable in the back end once you connect it to your computer. So I think you could do 4 different color palettes or something like that. And yeah, there is obviously a market for these types of microphones. And what is that? It's the dynamic USB broadcast microphone. So you can look at the Rode USB pod mic. You can look at the upscaled Rode XDM100, which is basically, as far as I can tell, an upscaled Rode podcaster microphone, the old white microphone that was universally not well reviewed. Let's just put it that way. They've upscaled that. The Samsung Q9U, and you know, we talk about the Q2U all the time, but they do have a large diaphragm microphone called the Q9U. The Shure as MV7, the Audio-Technica AT2040 USB, and the Rode, and I will go condenser here, but it was a big talk in the town because it was 32-bit float, the Rode NT1 5th generation. So you do have a class of microphone now that you can choose from if you only want to use USB. Now, there are some detriments to using USB. I know when I was starting out, I know when a lot of people are starting out, they just want to jump in and they're like, I can just use a USB into my computer. Well, that's true. You can, but there are some drawbacks, including if you want to try to record multiple USB microphones, say you want to sit down with a friend or friends and record a podcast, there is some problems and a lot of limits to whether you can or you can't podcast with multiple USB microphones in the same sitting, in the same room. There is latency and monitoring. What am I talking about? A lot of them have headphone jack inputs in the back of them or somewhere on the microphone, and there is increased latency because you're going from the microphone to the computer, and then that same audio is going from the computer back to the microphone. So there's latency, and it sounds like you might be behind yourself. If that's going to bug you, and it would me, then the latency is probably not great. And you are depending on that USB connection, which there are multiple failure points to it. It's not as robust as a XLR connection. So you can crimp one of the sides of the cord. Your USB port on whatever machine or mobile device that you're using could go bad. So there are additional, not that the connections don't exist with an XLR microphone, they're just more robust on an XLR microphone. So there are some detriments, but there are a lot of positives too. Like it's just plug and play. You don't need anything else. You just plug it straight into the computer and you get good quality studio sound.
The only thing that, two things I'll throw in here is the first, with the latency with the headphones, I think that is product dependent. There are some that I think are as good as you have with like monitoring through a digital audio mixer, like a Rodecaster Pro or, you know, something like that, because that's the same idea where that's you're listening back to digital and some of them are terrible. So I think your mileage may vary depending on the microphone. But the other thing that I think is really easily overlooked by people who are doing the recording is what they're feeding the USB microphones into. If you're feeding your USB because it's a digital signal, it needs to be processed by something like a computer. And if you're feeding it into a computer that is underpowered, you might start to find there's problems like artifacts in the audio or maybe dropouts, or you might end up getting a real inconsistent timeline. That can happen where if your computer can't keep up with the audio that's being recorded, and we've experienced this firsthand, we've seen other people experience this, where you end up having that one section might start to fall a little bit out of sync of where it should be in real time. And so if you're mixing up tracks or matching them up with the edit process, you might find that all of a sudden you got to do a little bit of finessing to move it maybe right or left or a little bit. So you need to make sure that you have a reliable machine if you're using USB, just because if you are trying to capture an audio recording on something that is being highly taxed, like you're using a way underpowered machine, you might find there's some problems. And this is especially compounded when you have other things going on in the computer with an underpowered machine, like maybe you're doing a video podcast. So, you know, just keep that in mind, that that can be a factor as well.
Well, on to our last point in our podnering segment this week. You know, Steven, I'm feeling a little, you know, my studio's getting a little hot. It's getting summertime. And it's getting a little hot in here. You know, I got that monster of a computer. It raises the temperature in my office by like 15 degrees as we're recording. The door is shut. I do have an air conditioning, a central air conditioning vent in the back of the room, but it's going with the rest of the house, right? It's not just isolated here. So if the rest of the house is okay, it's not going to be running. So yeah, I'm wondering, what can I do to cool that down a little bit this summer?
Well, funny you say that, because a little while ago I shared on here that I was looking for a solution for just that, trying not to use my computer to heat up this inferno of a room all the time, especially when I'm not podcasting. And I did it, SP, after many, many, many years, and it doesn't fully meet the previous laid out requirements that I set. I am making a compromise. Okay. I bought myself a Mac, and this is crazy, because I am a Windows guy through and through for a long time. I've grown up with Windows, and yes, I've used Mac along the way and stuff, but I got myself a Mac M2 Pro. Now, there's a whole bunch of variables that contribute to why I went this way. There's personal aspects, there's things about what I want to do with that existing machine, to do with family and enabling other uses of it. But that's not the place to talk about it on this podcast. What I am going to say is that I'm not locked into keeping this. I am fully admitting that this is something that I'm seeing, will this work for me? And I bought it from somewhere that has a more generous return policy than anywhere else. I bought it from Costco because I want a little bit longer of a time. And with Costco computer returns, they're a little longer than everywhere else, to see if this is going to work for me. It's not a small investment. It's not, you know, you could spend a lot more if you're building a gaming machine than what I have invested. Let's be clear on that.
A casual listener of the show might infer over the past, I don't know, few shows, that you might have taken some available capital that you might have used for a next generation digital mixer that you had to return because it didn't work. And you might have used it, decided to use it to upgrade your computing power or your computing availability in your studio. One might infer something like, I'm not saying it did or did not happen. I'm just saying somebody might infer that this would happen.
I think you could really make a good case for that. I absolutely do. So anyways, I did end up doing this, and we will see how it goes. And if you'd like to come to our Discord, betterpodcasting.com/Discord, I'd love to talk more about the sort of way I ended up here and the reason, you know, the personal aspects that is making me think about this. But I am actually podcasting on it tonight. 2 days ago, we recorded the official Gonna Geek show on it as well. And I am not going to sit here and give a full review or a full thought on this, but I did buy the Mac Mini M2 Pro because I did think that was important. So I have 3 monitor outputs, which is one less than I really wanted. It's got 16 gigs of RAM, a 512 hard drive, but of course, you know, you had to do the external. And I have a couple initial thoughts on this. And what I will say is I'm going to give a couple initial thoughts jumping over to this. And then any updates I have going forward until, you know, I might have a full conclusion to this big decision here will just be things that come up that I think, okay, this is worth talking about in the realm of podcasting. And then maybe, you know, once I've decided one way or another, I'll give a more detailed, you know, whole view of my move or maybe lack thereof to a Mac. So what I do want to say is that off the bat, I think for podcasters, I think that there's a lot of people who still blanketly use statements that imply Mac is you know, a solid beast. And there's people who say you don't need much RAM with Mac. And I will say that I would disagree firmly with both of those statements, at least from a podcaster perspective. On day two, I hard locked the machine just by accidentally shutting down the computer I was using a network share from. I didn't mean to actually shut it down, but it just went down while I had it open and the whole thing hard locked up. I couldn't get out of it. From a RAM perspective, I'm constantly sitting around 80% of that 16 gigabytes when I'm doing podcast related things, whether that's editing. I did edit last week's show on it. Or it's streaming. And so from a podcast perspective, I would disagree with the notion that you don't need a lot of RAM on a Mac, because I believe that the 80% is being throttled at some point, because it's very consistently around that where I'm not seeing a huge jump. I think it's doing stuff with the processing or the managing of it. So I think there's flaws in those statements. So that's the first thing I'll say. And then the second thing that I will say is that for me, I've ran into a couple compatibility problems here right off the bat. I went and I've been editing in DaVinci Resolve under Windows. There is DaVinci Resolve for Mac as well. And so I ended up pulling in the file, and I went and I easily relinked all the media. That was really easy to do. But what I found was that basically my VST plugins were incompatible with the current version of Mac. I believe that's likely related to either an OS update, or if you didn't know this, a couple of years ago, Apple created their own processors. And so, you know, this is something that there is a compatibility issue with some of those processors with legacy software. So it could be related to that. So luckily, on the heels of last week's conversation, I was going to be updating my Isotope RX suite anyways. So I was able to do that, but if I wasn't planning on doing that, it would have been a cost I would have had to pay outright, because my RX7 was not compatible. And the same with the Waves plugins that I had. Now, those I were not planning on updating, but I did want to be able to use them if I needed. So with Waves, you can go and you can sign up for a like a one-year service plan sort of thing. And so for me to update all of the plugins I was using was $26 for all of them. So I just did it. So I had that. But again, these are costs that, you know, if you're switching over, you might have to consider if you're not planning on doing those. And then the other thing I'll throw in there is that, back to that whole software compatibility thing, I actually tagged last week's file in Windows. I spent way too long trying to find an ID3 tag editor that looked good. And so I ended up just giving up eventually and wanting to come back. And I just went and did it in Windows because I wanted to get it published. But one of the tools that I found out there after Googling for a Mac-based ID3 tag editor, I think there's a compatibility problem with either the current version of the Mac OS or with the chip, just because it wasn't allowing me to save properly. I think there's a permissions problem in there. I will hunt a little bit more because it looks like it has all the fields that I want. It just wouldn't save properly. So I got to do a little bit of digging on that. But, you know, that's something that people would need to consider as well from a podcaster perspective. If you're making the jump, you would need to think about if you're using any tools like that and what can you use instead. So we'll see. I did, like I said, edit last week's podcast on the Mac. And from a rendering perspective, the MP3 output, the audio output was more or less the same. I went and I actually pulled that file back into Windows and re-rendered it as well. It was 13 minutes, I think, on Windows, 12 minutes on this Mac. That could be a variety of differences. Could be hard drive speed difference or something like that. But the video file was actually quite a bit, relatively speaking, quicker on the Mac. And it was about 12 minutes on the Mac, and it was about 18 on the Windows. Now, I will say this. I believe there's a little bit of hijinks going on here in DaVinci Resolve, because when you go to export on the Mac version of DaVinci Resolve, I am only on the free version. There is an option there to export using hardware acceleration mode. There's a checkbox for that. I don't have that same checkbox on Windows, and I believe that's likely because on DaVinci Resolve, they say when you get the paid version, when you get the studio edition, you then have access to the hardware acceleration for things like the NVIDIA hardware acceleration. So I think maybe it slid into the free version. Maybe they've added that feature to the free version on the Mac, whether that's to do testing or that's because of the architecture or they're trying to, I don't know, hypothetically dig into maybe the Final Cut market. I don't know what it is, but that option was definitely there on Mac versus not there on Windows. And from what I understand, it should not be there on the free version because I do know they tout that as a studio thing. So who knows? That's probably the difference why, but yeah, that's my initial experience and we will see where it takes me. And I've got less than 90 days now to make that decision.
Tick tock, tick tock. Well, I'm excited to see what you come out with it. I know a longtime Windows guy going over to Mac with a limited Mac or OS experience, Apple experience. It'll be interesting where you go. And it's not like you have a suite of Apple devices at your fingertips. It's not like you have a MacBook Pro or Air. You don't have an iPad recent, you know, generation or an iPhone yourself. I know you have one in the house, but you don't have one yourself to experience the entire architecture across the board. So you're simply using this for podcasting. So it'd be interesting to see what comes out of that.
All right. I think it's time we get to one of our most exciting episodes of the Media Host Discussion. Oh, SP, 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 SP. Are you ready for this one?
I am. I took the hit. I'll take the hit for this because I think I was the one that put it on there. But I'm glad that we're doing this because it is coming up in conversation quite a bit, Substack. So this week we're getting on conventional. We're going to explore a powerful capability. It's not primarily meant for podcasting, but it does have podcast media hosting, Substack. That's what it's called, Substack. Now, before exploring Substack as a possibility to move our shows to, we primarily thought of it as a subscription email platform, which it is. But Substack is capable of hosting media and distributing it via an RSS feed. So we're going to explore it, match it with our criteria. We're going to add some notes along the way like we have been doing, and we'll see if it's going to remain on our list or if we're going to kick it to the curb. Now, according to online information about the company, Substack was founded in 2017. Currently, it's based in the San Francisco Bay Area. Substack's last funding type was noted as equity crowdfunding in the documentation that I saw online. It employs somewhere between 51 and 100 personnel, with 94 noted in June of 2022. No idea if that's perpetuated 2 years into the future. And to date, before our research for this episode, neither of us have ever dreamed of using a Substack with hosting our podcasts. And for this episode, I did use one of the two podcasts that have pod faded after 2017 that the owner of them allowed me to use. This, again, is with the expressed owner's permission. So I didn't take a show out of nowhere and throw it on there like a lot of people might. It is with express permission. And I did import the show from Red Circle to Substack and continued the show by uploading a new episode, which I'm going to have to modify later. But Stephen, what was your experience?
I went and signed up for a new account, like I was creating a brand new show. And when I went to sign up, it just went and basically emailed me a login link that I could use to get everything all going with this setup. And then I had to start by making a Substack itself. And then after that, go through and set up the podcast credentials. So because I wasn't using an import, I have to say, I think it felt a little bit complicated just off the bat because I was making essentially almost the equivalent of what you'd do for a podcast, because that's the idea of a Substack, is it's a set of features, right? So, or it's a set of information you're setting up. And then I go into the podcast setup. So it almost felt like double setup to me.
In full disclosure, I also had to do the double setup. I had to set up the Substack first and then import the show. So yeah, we had the similar experience there. Now for this review, we only use Substack's free capabilities. We did not attempt to utilize Substack's subscription model, which is the draw. A lot of people are using it as a Patreon alternative, but we did not use it that way. There is a not so simple process of 13 steps of setting up your creator dashboard with Substack. We both went through it. We won't detail this beyond the mention that we already did here, but once you do set up your Substack, which is free, foot stomp that, you can set up a free podcast. Now, using that as a basis, we'll continue with our format of discussing the highlights, the neutral points, and shortcomings of the Substack publishing service from the lens of a hobby podcaster.
Don't use it. There, the review's done.
Okay. Now, in case you want to know more,
let's get into it today, because we will do our usual thing, but there's your spoiler for the end. Yes. It is a large list for us to go through, but we will start with some of the kind things, the highlights. And let's kick off talking about the highlights. Yes, there's a 301 redirect capability. It is there. You have to navigate to the podcast page, the settings. Then you have to go into the danger zone. So you want to make sure you sing that song in your head while you're doing it. And once you have
danger zone,
once you have found yourself in the danger zone, you've got two options to either delete or migrate. And let's be, credit where credit's due here. The buttons that they make are very apparent. We have been hunting for these redirect or these delete capabilities in some of the recent hosts that we've discussed. And Substack does make it very obvious with their buttons. So kudos to them for not making them tiny, mostly hidden links like we've seen on a couple of other services.
So Substack is free to use, and the affordability should be high. Our affordability rating should be high, right? Well, unfortunately with Substack, we feel like we ultimately will have to balance the price with the capabilities. However, that's what our other criteria are for. So just like our review for Spotify for Podcasters, we'll go ahead begrudgingly and rate Substack as a 5 for affordability and lay the rest of the cards out as they're played.
Now, for data limitations, this is something we're going to put in the highlight section. We are a little hesitant to mention it because it does feel like they're unlikely to be something that you could really utilize every single week to its maximum because it is quite high, but we will take it at their word and say that they say that you have a limit of 20 gigabytes, basically. So 20
per file.
Per file.
Per file.
20 gigs per file is the limit. So keep that in mind that they say that you can upload up to 20 gigabytes, but I would be very curious if you were doing that every single time, if there might be something knocking at your door. But there's no limits listed for downloads or storage. So on the surface, this does look like a pretty big win as far as limitations go. But we mentioned this before. We do think that it's fair for media hosts to have limitations to protect themselves. So I suspect probably if we went hunting in the terms of service, there might be something in there that would help protect them a little bit. That's my guess anyways.
Yeah, the 20 gigabytes is largely for the video files. And as I've discovered, you cannot RSS feed your video files. It's simply for your email post. But moving on, it also appears that Substack will only allow you to have one RSS feed per Substack, but they're free. So just like Spotify for Podcasters, you can just create a new account with another email and get multiple feeds that way. But since it's free, adding a new RSS is really easy once you get the Substack. Well, we'll see how long this continues, because this sort of business strategy could be easily abused by people just throwing podcast after podcast after podcast out there. And again, it's not necessarily the files, but it's the RSS feed and how much time that is hit on the data going back and forth. So we'll see if abusers to the system come in and make it non-viable as a business entity. But for now, multiple RSS feeds are achievable through the separate accounts. Does this match our criteria? Well, say yes, but not in the traditional sense of having the multiple shows on one account. Now, this approach makes it feel like they may be trying to encourage growth of the rest of the platform by increasing the amount of features on Substack and keeping people on their platform for all their needs, kind of like Patreon does.
Now, let's talk about video, because they will allow you to upload a video like we mentioned, and, you know, a reasonable amount, so you can have up to 20 gigs per file to upload, but that's not in the RSS feed like we mentioned. Where we did want to call this out as a highlight, though, is it will automatically re-encode that video file to audio, so this is something that it might make your process a little bit easier if you are somebody producing a video file each week, because you just have to upload the video, and then you get yourself the audio file on the other side. Now, like Spotify for podcasters, this video file will only be internal to your Substack. So we were a little bit excited until we did try to publish and then see that it wasn't actually in the RSS feed for the video file, but maybe one day?
Yeah, we don't actually know how common this is, but we noticed that even after the podcast was set up, there was an import episodes button available. This was after publishing, so if somebody makes a mistake or changes their mind, they can import their show after. Now, the final highlight for Substack that we see is the fact that Substack allows subscriptions. In fact, this is a key item of Substack. Like Patreon, if you're familiar with that, you can distribute a subscription podcast episode on the Substack app. And we didn't test this capability since neither of us are looking to monetize, but we'll just note the capability is there. And in fact, there are some folks out there who might be using Substack for their existing monetization platform for their project. So this would just integrate nicely with that. The entire essence of the podcast section feels like it's basically an add-on option for somebody with an existing Substack platform. So this could be a real potential win for you if you're already using it as an email platform or a subscription email platform. But that's the very specific carve out we'll give for the positives of this approach. And with that, that wraps up the very short highlight section. Moving on into our neutral zone, we'll start with our views of Substack's import affordability. I had the chance to check out Substack's import ability by moving the podcast that I had previously hosted on Red Circle to Substack. And as a side note, this did seem like a terrible option considering the unknowns with Substack, but I did tell the original creator, and this is part of the approval email chain or text chain back and forth, quote, "I also wanted a show that wasn't currently available because I'm going to be messing it the F up. The show is going to be bounced around from media host to media host every week. It's going to be thrown up every time somebody presses play. It's going to be used hard and put away wet," unquote. So I proceeded in the name of this Better Podcasting episode to actually do the import. After choosing, quote, "import a podcast," unquote, there is a page to type in your RSS feed. Then a page pops up with a few services listed to tell them about to use the new link. I assumed the new link meant RSS. It wasn't specified as RSS. It was literally called link. And sadly, Red Circle was not listed as a previous service. You had Libsyn, Megaphone, Anchor. Yes, Anchor. We know it's Spotify for podcasters now. Podbean, Simplecast, SoundCloud. I threw up in my mouth a little bit. SoundCloud. Okay. Spreaker, Squarespace, Buzzsprout, Omni Studio, Audio Boom, and Captivate.fm. And then apparently, Ron Burgundy here, I'll have to read what Stephen literally just put in the document. SP's House of Hosting. It's on there. No, it's not. Okay, I managed to find the Red Circle 301 redirect anyway over on Red Circle and move on with the transfer. And then strangely, there is another page for submit your new feed link to podcast directory, which we had a little debate offline, and I will give Stephen credit. I was saying that this was basically saying that Substack didn't know what a 301 redirect is, but then Stephen wisely said, "Now, wait a minute, SP. It's not that bad to tell your directories where you're actually going to where the new feed is." So that's a possibility. When I've been importing the feed, I have literally just been having those directories like Apple Podcasts and Spotify literally catch up within an hour or two. That's all it takes every single time that I've done the transfer so far on both the shows. But if something is a hitch in there, and it doesn't automatically, with the 301 redirect, modify itself to go to the new feed, you can always go to that feed and say, hey, look, here's the new one, either through a customer service sort of situation, or in the case of like Podcasts Connect on Apple, you can go ahead and throw the new feed in there. I don't recommend doing that, but it is available.
Now, moving on to some of the help discussion, the customer support is listed as an exclusive through email address, and that's how you're going to get your main support. There's no expected response times listed, but there is a FAQ section, and this is the part that really drags it down here, because the FAQ itself is very complex along with the help center, especially when you're trying to look at things for podcasting. Now, neither of us have used the support, and as such, we would say that the best we could give is a neutral, because there is support options there, but the help itself is kind of complicated, and we'll come back to that a little bit later.
Substack does not appear to have a full service all-in-one podcasting solution. However, there is a record option within the post creation tab. Still, it's really rudimentary, and it's live to tape functionality with no editing or production capability. So we'll just call this a neutral for now, but it actually has a record capability where other services don't. Substack still appears to be running off venture capitalist funding via their company profiles. In 2022, as I mentioned before, it had 94 employees. And like Spotify for podcasters, Substack's business model is a far wider net than just podcasting. So we'll give company health a neutral rating for now and just keep our eyes and our ears out for any additional news that we see in the area for the company health of Substack.
Now, neither of us have heard any positives or negatives about the reliability, and the fact that there's a lot of lack of discussion in this area, we're going to leave it as neutral because it does feel like we can't speak to it either direction. And then moving on to file types, we're going to say this is a neutral as well because they support MP4, H.264, AAC, MP3, WAV, and AAC. But there's a big caveat to this because they do say that they'll accept those file types, but there is a whole re-encoding aspect that we will come back to a little bit later on this that kind of takes away a little bit from some of those file types and their compatibility.
So that leaves the remainder of our criteria that we will discuss for the shortcomings. First up, Substack may have the most shortcomings of any podcast media host that we've reviewed so far. So strap in for the entertaining ride as we navigate through some pretty major ones. First up is the help section. We want to get this one right out of the way off the bat. Honestly, the help section feels terrible. The help page seems like a mix of lengthy scrolling walls of text and other more traditional help pages that are hard to follow. Why are they hard to follow? Well, because in the articles that we checked, it seemed like they were interwoven with the main Substack help, and podcasting is just an element of Substack. Steven has previously mentioned that. Now, while we might be able to overlook this on another platform and find some pros in the quality of the articles to make it a neutral, the reality is, getting back to the prior point, the podcasting element feels like it's just an add-on feature to Substack, and as such, it feels confusing to navigate the podcasting section, or at the very least, how it all fits in. As such, the help pages feel much more important, and it just totally falls apart in the help section, in our opinion. It feels like the help of yesteryear, confusing search results, lengthy text pages, and sometimes you're left more confused than you started, which is, you know, often for me, but if you add to that, then it gets a little bit more aggravating.
Now, moving on, let's talk the statistics. This is SP's favorite part, and honestly, they're probably the worst we've seen for a podcast hosting service to date. We're not even sure what certain aspects of them mean, and there are a few areas that do seem specifically outlined for the podcasting aspect. But when you go to the main statistics section of the dashboard, there's definitely some things in there that are not podcast statistic related. And there's that whole conflating of the two products that just begins to make the stats fall apart. it's hard to understand what's what and see the podcast statistics and compare them to the rest of the Substack statistics, such as paid subscriber numbers and things like that. It's just a lot of confusingness in there when you're trying to dig into your stats for just your podcast, because again, that whole Substack aspect comes into play.
The provided website is equally useless with no way to play episodes on the main page. You have to click into an episode page to be able to play the episode. Also, it provides no integration to social media of even where you might be able to see the subscribe, follow, or download the episodes. It's customizable, but the options to do so are hidden down on the third block on the settings page of the dashboard. You actually have to scroll down quite a bit. And to be honest, it feels like they took an existing website layout meant for something outside of podcasting and made it work for podcasting. The biggest example I could give you is, say you're going into the back end of a WordPress page and you have all of those options and just the whole thing. It just feels very, very overcomplicated for a podcast media host section. So if I was using Substack to generate my RSS, I would definitely seek out a third-party website instead of using the mess that's on Substack. It's just no for me. And why we're in this section, the player sucks.
It's really not an intuitive player. It seems oversized, and it feels like maybe they designed the player just trying to be different for the sake of being different. You know, there's certain things that you start to expect a certain normality, a way that people are able to use them. And the player is one of them, because people embed this player a certain way. And so the player they have is just not good, in our opinion. So, you know, right in there along with the website. And then the dashboard itself, just as SP mentioned, feels very complicated, very convoluted. It's not intuitive. It takes forever to find the option that we were looking for. At least that was our experience. And I don't know about you, SP, but I kept finding myself accidentally going out of the podcast section on the dashboard into other areas of the Substack dashboard. This is something that I was trying to experiment with the podcast section, and it just kept bringing me back to other areas in the Substack dashboard that had nothing to do with my podcast. Now, maybe it was user error. Maybe I was clicking the wrong things, but I did it many times as I navigated. So I feel like maybe there's some form of crossover or easy way to find yourself out of the corner of podcasting within the Substack dashboard. It just didn't feel good for me because I kept being like, where am I now?
Now, I'm not going to talk about the user ability here. I'm going to talk about the creator ability here. The iOS app and the mobile web interface are extremely limiting for the podcast creators. Now, I have used the Substack app as a consumer of Substack, like emails and posts, blog posts, whatever you want to call them. It's okay for that as a consumer, but as a creator, it is not designed for you whatsoever. There are only 6 available known RSS destinations in the Substack backend, and Amazon Music is not one of them. I think that's a big mistake. However, of note, there was no sign of Google Podcasts, and it did say YouTube Music, so somebody's keeping abreast of stuff that's going on there. Sorry, that's not getting a win for us, though. Amazon Music is important as we go forward. It's one of the main 4 or 5 distribution hubs, so they probably need some sort of integration with Amazon Music. It might be an overall company philosophy of not wanting to do anything with Amazon. I don't know. I just know that that is a sentiment that's out there in some circles. As far as we found, there is no podcasting 2.0 support. That's another shortfall. And there is no connection to social media for auto posting. Substack definitely wants to keep you on their app, which, to go back to the previous comment of podcasting 2.0, one of the tenets of that is the value for value model, and Substack's tenets is a subscription model. So the two are mostly incompatible.
Now, earlier when we were talking file types, we had a caveat for there, and let's get to that caveat because we're going to talk about the file integrity. This is basically what Substack is doing when you upload a file, and we saw several changes. For me, I saw the file name was altered. It literally downloaded for me as transcoded.mp3 when I tried to download my file. That's the MP3 that I got out of it. We found the
If you were using Windows and you did this a lot, there would be a lot of transcoded.mp3, transcoded.mp3.1, transcoded.mp3.2, transcoded.mp3.3. So you get the idea.
Yeah. Also, we found that the file bitrate was re-encoded, so we both had different experiences with the re-encoding, but it was converted to 96 kilobits per second. SP's was encoded up from 80. Mine was encoded down from 192.
You know, I have to make a caveat here that 80 kilobits per second, this is the file that was given to me. I do not produce a file at 80 kilobits per second. So I just have to mention that every time this comes up. It's like, no, I don't. I'm at 96 or 192. I'm not at 80.
Fair enough. We also had ID3 tags that were removed. We had the podcast category removed. The podcast descriptions were removed. The podcast ID was removed. And the podcast URL was removed. And then for me, what was weird about mine, and maybe this was because I had such a large file, my artwork was actually removed from the ID3 tags, but it wasn't for SP. So we don't know what the difference is, but I double checked my transcoded.mp3 and it was not there.
Then also the size of your file changed, right?
Yeah, and that's probably because of the transcoding, but just to give you an idea of what you're losing when potentially when something is re-encoded like this one was from such a high bitrate down. It went from an 89 megabyte file down to a 47 megabyte file. So their process is basically losing about half of what I uploaded.
Moving on to another shortcoming, there are no team accounts or accesses available. It's simply the singular email address login. Also, there is no hint of dynamic audio insertion. Again, this is a subscription model, not an ad model. And the reason, by the way, that we, just as a reminder, we put dynamic audio insertion in is if you as a hobby podcaster want to put like announcements in there. That's really why this is a criteria for us as hobby podcasters, not for ad insertion. Moving on, there are no monetization options outside of their subscription. Again, trying to put you on their architecture and their framework. There is no video RSS support. We've mentioned that before. Videos are allowed, but it's only playable on their site. And to be honest, at this point, I quit. I didn't want to go any further in making the show notes. And as Steven came into this a couple days later after this, he didn't want to go any further either. This has been depressing enough from a podcasting standpoint. So we're going to stop the criteria right there.
I guess, though, we will leave off the shortcomings. Getting back to the point that we mentioned earlier, it just really feels like podcasting was sort of shoehorned into Substack. Everything within the platform feels like it was tacked on or just made to fit. Maybe the spoon was bent a little bit. A great example of this was the RSS feed. And the RSS feed, at least my experience, the RSS feed URL that was generated was on api.substack.com with a bunch of other miscellaneous random ID characters in there. It just wasn't user friendly at all. And I just think that that's a consideration people should have. It is, if you are going to be putting this RSS feed out there and you're going to have people maybe occasionally manually looking at it or manually copying it, it just didn't feel like what you would expect from a podcasting platform. API.substack.com, what is somebody going to think if they're trying to grab that as an end user for your RSS feed? So I just think that overall, it really, really feels like it was just made to fit.
Steven, I have one last thing that I just have to get out here. And that is, one of the major problems I had is you couldn't backdate a post. That's why we changed the criteria the last episode, to be honest with you. Every other podcast media host that I've run into, you can go in, you can set the publishing date, including years in the past. That was particularly important with this show when the episode was published in 2016. Now, I have an episode out there that's published in 2024. The show was not created in 2024. It was created in 2015 to 2017 timeframe. So when I import this into the next podcast media host, I'm going to have to go in and I'm going to have to backdate the post to its original publishing date. And that is very frustrating to me. And one of the main reasons why I won't do this, we talked about a lot of reasons why that is a noted capability that we would need in a podcast media host last time, but this was something that was severely lacking here.
I have a theory, by the way, that that is related to the shoehorning in. And I think that that could be to do with the fact that, you know, Substack, it's obviously clearly money related. It's really, you know, trying to offer something to people for something. And so I wonder if the limitation on the ability to backdate is so that it is very clear what you've offered at what time to the people who are paying for it. So that way you're not like, what are you talking about? You said you were going to subscribe to my Substack and I'm going to give you 3 episodes a month. And look, I did give them to you, but actually you didn't do it and you backdated it. So that's my theory on it. Now, I could be wrong, but that's my theory.
No, I think you're completely right, because I've seen that done on other Patreons, but that's a discussion for another day. Moving into our summary here, long story short, we will not be placing Substack on our short list. For a hobbyist, I would say, and I think, Stephen, you agree with me, that Spotify for Podcasters is a better solution.
Far better solution.
Yeah, it might be the right fit for some business podcasters here on Substack, but if used in conjunction with other media hosts, it does have some advantages for notifications that new content has been published. And heck, there's probably a case to be made that most others are better, maybe even all, even the ones that we've dismissed from a podcast media host provider standpoint. The whole service just feels like it isn't meant for somebody thinking of podcasting, but it is thinking of podcasting as an afterthought to their overall experience. And there's so much left to be desired, especially for a hobby podcaster. And honestly, for a hobby podcaster, it's very difficult for us to see how it checks any meaningful boxes. And Substack has a long way to go to even consider a second look from us here on Better Podcasting.
This is where we here at Better Podcasting turn the show over to you as we run through some of your feedback. We call this segment Better Podback.
We are going to talk about some items that were brought up in our Discord. So it's a great place to talk with other hobby podcasters. It's a great, I mean, you don't have to deal with, even on r/podcasting on Reddit, it's much more isolated to hobby podcasters. So you can catch it out at betterpodcasting.com/discord. And talking about podcatchers, you know, we were talking about that last time, and Yakko, he piped up and he said, I'm still using iCatcher.
And this is something we want to keep this conversation going. We want to know, what podcatchers do you use? Because there are a lot of people out there right now who have had to move on from Google Podcasts. So this is a really good opportunity to revisit this conversation. And there are things that people maybe previously used the last time we really talked about this that are no good anymore, or maybe the reverse. There are new things on the scene that we didn't mention last time. So if you are somebody who has a recommendation for a podcatcher, please let us know. You can email podcast@betterpodcasting.com. Come to our Discord at betterpodcasting.com/discord, or just make yourself a specialized RSS feed that talks all about the podcatcher that you like, but only submit it to that one podcatcher, and maybe we'll find it.
In full disclosure, I was asked in the Discord server, since I was using Google Podcasts on the web app at work, and I was asked, well, have you tried Overcast? And I've been swamped since that question has been asked at work, so I haven't had a chance to try it, but I will attempt to try it before we record our next episode to see if I can use it at work. And my issue is I have a lot of the interweb that's blocked at my work. So I would have to be one of the things that has been previously approved, because I'm not going to go through the approval process for that. So moving on, our next topic is Scatmaker in the Discord asked an interesting, useful feature update for podcasters. And the summary here is there's some modified changes in Resolve for transcripts in Resolve 19. And Stephen, have you had a chance to check any of this out?
Yes, I did see this. And what you want to do is go to betterpodcasting.com/294, and I'll put a link to this YouTube video that Scatmaker linked. And full disclosure, I did see a little bit of chatter about this in a couple other scenes areas before he ended up putting that YouTube video in there. But I say this because it's definitely meaning there's a lot of chatter about the things that are discussed in this video. If, you know, there's multiple places talking about this, and they made some changes to how transcripts will work. And I believe transcripts might only be in the studio version of Resolve, but you might have that. So let's talk about this. And one of the things that they've added is speaker detection. So when you are having the automatic transcriptions generated, it will detect who is the speaker. And this is helpful because there's also the ability, it's a little bit easier now, to basically edit by text because you have a transcript that says who's saying what. So say you go into the transcript and you delete certain text from that transcript, it will then go into your timeline and delete that individual section. And you also can use it to remove dead space when you're in the transcription area. There is a little button that you can push and it basically will go and remove all that dead space based off of the transcript. And so those are features that have been added in there. I think there's a couple others that might not be in this video. I seem to vaguely remember that, but it does look like the latest version of Resolve has added some features there around the idea of utilizing transcripts for editing purposes. So very cool. Glad to see that keeping going. You know, maybe one day I'll buy the studio version. For now, I'll just keep using the free version. And I will say this. One of the reasons I actually like continuing to use the free version is so that I have an idea of what is out there for somebody who might not be able to afford the studio version. I like that everything I do is in the free version, and so I can speak to that. So I do like that. But maybe one day I'll get the studio.
I still have to try it at some point, and I do want to, but I just haven't yet. So I'm excited to see all these innovations in something that is versatile enough to be used as both freeware or shareware and paid. So yeah, looking forward to that. Hey, if you have something you want to talk to us, again, our Discord server is betterpodcasting.com/discord. Go to the Better Podcasting channel in there. And there's some lively discussions in there throughout the week. And anybody is welcome to join in. Anybody is welcome to offer their advice because we are a community of hobby podcasters and you might have more experience than either Steven or I in a different area. So we welcome that over there. It's a very inviting and friendly community.
Now we have some bad news to share here. Well, it's bad news in half of it. And why I say that is because there's two of us that do this podcast and we know for one of us, this is great news. And we're not doing an episode next week. We're off next week. We're taking the week off. And why I say that is because I know you'll be excited not to have to hear from me, but I know you'll be super bummed to not hear from SP. So it's, I guess, 50% good news, 50% bad news.
Yeah, there'll be a few weeks throughout the year that I have to take off for various trips. This is the first one. This is work related, but I get to go to a nice place. So if you happen to be in the Port Canaveral area, and for those around the Kennedy Space Center, you know what I'm talking about. I will be down there next week. So this comes out Monday. I'll be down there for a few days afterwards. If you happen to get this, I might be able to swing out and meet you somewhere. So the Discord is probably the best place to get a hold of me there. I will not have my phone with me throughout the day. So I will have to catch you at night after I leave work. And it's just exciting for me because hopefully there's nothing on the schedule yet, but you know, I'll be aware they were, you know, watch the rockets. So, you know, I am a rocket scientist. It's what I do. I like to see them, you know, launch.
Try not to get hit by any space debris. I know that's a thing down there.
It's a down there. Yeah. But you know, they're refining the aiming to get it more into the Pacific Northwest area, you know, closer to where you live. We did get the right continent. You got to admit that.
Fair enough. You're getting closer. But come back the week after for the next episode of Better Podcasting, because we will be back the week after. And in the meantime, do come to the Discord, like SP said, because there's lots of awesome geeky talk in there, including podcast talk, including related to podcasting, but not directly podcasting talk. Like right now, I will call out in our tech and gear channel on the Discord, there's some discussion going on about data and the possibility of having lost data and what you might do
of data
if that happened and getting that back. And this is something that we've talked about related to podcasting before. So there are tangential discussion points there as well.
I'll leave you with this. We are reviewing other podcast media host services. I have had a couple that have been provided to me, suggested to me. I can't guarantee that we're going to get to everything, but I have listened to your inputs and Stephen and I have discussed it. So we'll see if we get to them or not. But if you have your favorite podcast media host provider that we haven't reviewed yet, or you have something to say about one we did review, please get a hold of us. And heck, we might have you on the future show.
So for episode number 294 of Better Podcasting, I'm Stephen saying I'm hungry. Don't want an orange. I want an apple.
And I'm SP saying, see you guys next time. Maybe I'll have a tan, maybe not, but we'll see. Catch you later. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for checking out another episode of Better Podcasting. You can find the full back catalog of Better Podcasting at betterpodcasting.com. If you're into geeky podcasts, please check out the other podcasts on the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. This show was produced and edited by Stephen John Drew. Voice work was done by L.W. Salinas. Thanks again for listening or watching, and we hope to see you again next week.